You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. Valley fever has long been a major health concern for people who live in the San Joaquin Valley and throughout the Southwest. A fungus that grows in the soil can become airborne. If inhaled, it can cause serious health issues, even death in some cases, though most people who contract the disease have a mild case and they don't even know they've had it. Valley fever is the subject of a new collaborative reporting project, which Valley Public Radio is a part of, from the Center for Health Journalism Collaborative. It includes a number of publications, including the Bakersfield Californian. Joining us on the phone now, we have Harold Pierce, who's a reporter with the Collaborative and the Californian. Harold, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me, Joe.
And also joining us in our studio today is FM89's Kerry Klein, who is also a part of the Collaborative and who has a piece coming next week on this topic. Kerry, welcome as well.
Hi there. Good morning.
Harold, I want to start to you. What's going on with the rise or potential rise in the number of new cases of Valley fever? I'm seeing this word epidemic being thrown around. What's the rationale behind that and what's happening with the numbers?
Right. Well, where we're at right now is we're in an epidemic threshold, and what that basically means is that we're seeing more cases than we would in a routine typical year. Through just June this year, they saw about 890 cases, and a typical year in Kern County where they like to see it is right close to 500. That's pretty average. So we've already surpassed the threshold. We're in epidemic status, and they're saying with the weather patterns the way they're at right now, they're going to be looking for closer to 1,800 to 2,000 cases by the end of this year, which is huge. I mean, we haven't seen that many cases since the early 90s when they had the what they call the Great Epidemic.
And I want to talk about that in a little bit and how the weather plays a factor there. But before we go on, Harold, most of those cases that we're seeing statewide, most of those are in Kern County, as I understand it?
All 890 are in Kern County, and this is the most endemic region in California, is right here in Kern County. The other big endemic regions throughout the nation are Arizona and other parts of the Southwest. They also get some cases, not a lot, but some cases up in Washington, Oregon.
Now, it's been a big issue for some time, and getting more attention to it has been a big part of the challenge. 3 years ago, Valley Public Radio, the Californian, and others were involved in this collaborative project that did a lot of different stories about Valley fever. Kerry, for those listeners who may be not aware about the details of this disease, you know, it sounds kind of innocuous, Valley fever. Is it just a matter of having a temperature, or what happens when somebody contracts Valley fever?
No, absolutely not. It can be so much worse than that. It can also be a lot better than that, which is part of the reason that the disease can be so insidious. So as you summarized nicely, it's a fungal disease. It's contracted when you breathe in the spores, when they're kicked up in dust or soil, things like that. Around half of the people, it's believed, who contract the disease show no symptoms whatsoever, which is one reason that perhaps the disease is underestimated. But among those who do get symptoms, you know, they range from kind of flu-like and pneumonia-like. It's often misdiagnosed as flu or pneumonia. It will go away on its own, but it can become, you know, a much worse lung disease, causing lung problems. It can become disseminated, get into your bones, cause meningitis. In very rare cases, people do die from it.
We're talking about Valley fever here today on Valley Public Radio and this new project from the Center for Health Journalism Collaborative, which this station is a part of, detailing the new looming epidemic. We're talking about this rise in cases right now. Harold Pierce with us on the phone from the Bakersfield Californian, who's done a lot of reporting on this. Harold, you mentioned climate and weather and comparing it to the Great Epidemic back in the 1990s. Tell us about that and how people think those two things are related.
Yeah, and this has been something that's studied not just from the 1990s, but back going to the 1940s, studying these weather patterns, because as Kerry Klein had mentioned and laid out, this is a fungus that grows in the soil, spores get kicked up, and the idea behind it is that when you have a long period of drought or rain, the rain grows that fungus in the environment, the drought dries it out, and then when the drought comes, it kicks that soil up. And when you have construction, agriculture, tilling, things like that, that leads to more disturbance in the environment, more possibility that coxy fungus gets kicked up into the air, and a greater potential for people to breathe it in. So that's kind of where the weather patterns play. We saw this El Nino come in last year, and as a result, we're seeing a lot more Valley fever cases now because it's dried out since March.
So when we look back to the 1990s, was that tied to the drought that we had and then that very wet March miracle?
March miracle, right.
Is that the theory, essentially?
That is the exact theory, yes.
When it comes to looking at that then, are we at a point where we can actually predict a Valley Fever outbreak, or is it more complicated?
It's a lot more complicated than that, you know, and I think that people would like to be at the point where we can predict it. And I think a lot of doctors can, you know, go out on their own and say, we're going to see a lot of Valley Fever cases this year. And this has been a year that people have been, you know, who are involved, experts, researchers have long predicted we're going to see a lot of cases, a huge spike. And we have. But conclusively, can we say it? No. And that's because dirt and dust and soil is so unpredictable. They tried doing studies like this over at CSU Bakersfield, and they were not successful. They couldn't actually create that correlation because the dirt and the coxie in the soil is so unpredictable. I mean, there's too many variables at play. You could have more construction in a given El Nino year that's dried out than you do in another one. So it's not necessarily a guessing game, but it becomes more difficult to say conclusively, yes, we had an El Nino and then we had a dry period. It's going to be a big bad year for coxie.
Again, we're talking about Valley Fever today. When you say coxie, that's another name for Valley Fever, right? Explain that.
That's the fungus, yes.
The fungus itself that lives in the soil. Carrie, in reporting on the stories that you're working on this, and Harold, you as well, how challenging is it to report on this disease? What's the biggest hurdle? Because it seems like there's a lot of things involving reporting or data that in some cases is not there or hard to interpret. Carrie, I'll let you go at this first.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a huge amount of data that's missing because it's so difficult to know, because this is a disease that is caused by something that is endemic to the soil in various regions. It's hard to know just how many people are exposed, just how many contract it and don't show symptoms. For other diseases who affect the same number of people, many of those other ones have had more research funding. And so there have not been maybe the amount of clinical trials that we would like to see about methods of prevention and treatment and detection and things like that. And I think that, one of Harold's stories actually may get into a lot about what's missing as well. And so I don't know, Harold, if you have more to add to that.
The data reporting is kind of a mess. And what we found in this project is that the numbers that are reported to the State Department of Public Health don't match the numbers that are reported to the local departments of public health. They don't match the numbers that are reported to the Centers for Disease Control. Nobody seems to be working from the same set of data. And part of the reason that is because there's a lot of lag time in between, not only when somebody contracts Valley Fever and then when somebody actually is diagnosed properly, because like it's been said earlier, a lot of this is misdiagnosed for pneumonia or bronchitis. Usually you're misdiagnosed for several weeks before you actually get it down properly. So there's a lot of a lag time with data as well, with the actual reporting process at these at the state centers.
Now, Harold, you mentioned that there were 890 confirmed cases of Valley Fever in Kern County through June of this year, but then fast forward into September, numbers reportedly spiked there. What happened in September?
Well, in September, that's just a big year for Valley Fever, and I think it's worth noting that 890 cases are what's reported through the Kern County Department of Public Health. If you were to look through the numbers through the morbidity and mortality weekly rate studies that the Centers for Disease Control puts out, they reported 455 cases. So that's where we're talking about this huge disparity in the numbers. But what happened in September is we had a huge dust storm on the 28th here, and I think we're going to see a lot more numbers spiking in October because of that. And like I said, these numbers aren't readily, you know, you don't see a dust storm and then immediately have, you know, a surge in cases the next week. It takes a few weeks before those things actually get diagnosed properly. Lab tests come in. But September and October are typically the two really, really high traffic months for Valley Fever. I think not just throughout California, but also in Arizona. And in Arizona, they're actually seeing lower numbers this year. I think they have 1,000 fewer cases they reported this year as opposed to last year because their monsoon season lingered a little bit longer, is what we've been told. And because of that, it dampened the coxie into the ground. Dust wasn't kicking up as much, and consequently, they have had fewer cases.
Now, you talked to somebody, a retired public health official from Kern County, who had his own theory about valley fever and climate. Tell us what he thinks is going on.
Yeah, Ron Talbot, he's an interesting guy. He's a retired lab director and epidemiologist from the Kern County Department of Public Health, and he's living in Arizona now, and he still keeps up to date with all the valley fever research. And what he had been tracking and studying for years on kind of a side project of his own was linking wet and dry years to valley fever incidents. And what he found is, I think that any time in March and April there was more than 4 or 5 inches of rainfall throughout the county, that you saw a spike in numbers in September and October. He linked those things, and he saw it in the early 90s. He saw it again in the 2010s, and we ran the numbers this time around, and it came very close to that. So I think there's probably a correlation, but a scientific one that we could say definitively, I don't know.
We're talking about valley fever today and this new project that has a number of different media organizations working together, including the Bakersfield Californian and Harold Pierce, who's with us on the phone, and Valley Public Radio's own Carrie Klein. Carrie, you have a story coming next week. Tell us a little about what you'll be sharing with us on next week's program, and then what this overall collaborative is all about.
Sure, yeah. So the story next week kind of deals with the fact that a lot of people have developed immunity, or many people, I should say, have developed immunity to valley fever. And so a lot of projects are trying to focus on how to detect that immunity among people and to know who is more or less susceptible to the disease. So this story next week is focusing on one method for detecting that and why it maybe is not being used as much as a lot of doctors expect that it would be at this stage.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so that'll be next Tuesday. Harold also has a story next Tuesday about these kind of gaps in data and reporting. This past weekend is when we kicked off the series officially. And so, Joe, as you said, we have 7 different outlets who are contributing, reporting to this series. Bakersfield Californian and KVPR, of course. There's also Vida and El Valle here in Fresno, The Voice of OC in Orange County, Arizona Daily Star in Tucson, and Radio Bilingue in Fresno, and La Estrella de Tucson, and the Center for Health Journalism. All of these together are kind of presenting a package of stories that will cover this whole topic holistically, from, you know, where Harold's story kicked off this past weekend on how the numbers have changed and the disease burden has changed over the years. We're also going to focus on research funding, efforts to prevent, treat, and detect the disease, and also focusing a lot on the specific people and communities and groups that are affected most by valley fever.
Well, Valley Public Radio's Carrie Klein, we look forward to these stories coming out over the next few weeks, including on this program. You can read Harold's piece online on our website at kvpr.org. Again, it's Just One Breath, a new project about valley fever from the Center for Health Journalism Collaborative. Harold Pierce on the phone and Carrie Klein with us in our studio today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Thanks for having me, Joe.